Sasami mit Free in der Band-Version, nochmal extra aufgenommen, nachdem die Platte schon fertig war, die Platte, die so heißt wie die Künstlerin Sasami Ashworth.
What are you saying about me in German?
All the bad things. You know, I've researched some stuff from your childhood when you were bad to your mother.
Nardwar. This is a Nardwar interview.
No, I'm not as good as him. He's the greatest,
oh
right?
My gosh, he had some crazy information on me, like wild stuff. Like he knew about some bike that I had locked up in college that was on Google Maps, like... just weird stuff.
Oh yeah, that's weird stuff. But I
he's
bet,
a spy.
But I bet he has like a whole crew of spies.
I hope so.
I mean, otherwise it's not explainable to me, and I could stop.
He definitely lives in a cave with multiple spies.
Yeah. If he does all that stuff on his own, he's like a genius. I think he is a genius.
He might be like a hacker.
Yeah.
I think he might actually be a hacker.
Yeah. People out there, Nardwar. If you haven't seen him. It's nice. He does the best interviews.
Good stuff.
All the artists leave the fucking place like, how do you know that?
Oh, you can say fuck here.
Yes, you can.
Ah, I
welcome,
love it.
Sasami, to Flux FM.
Fuck FM.
How have you been? We've met like 6 months ago or something when the album was like fresh.
Yeah. Just a little baby with its bottom being powdered.
Now it's in the kindergarten.
Yeah, now it's learning words. It's so cute.
Yeah. I was just thinking if it was bossing around the other kids already, you know?
Oh, no. My album is a sensitive, sweet album. The live show, though, that's a different story.
Yeah? The live show is kind of like bossing around other people.
There's some bossing happening.
Well, it's been a great record, and I think you've had a great tour with the record. Everything... went quite well for that first record that's been written while you had been on the road with Cherry Glazer.
Yep.
That's the first thing that I was wondering about. How could an artist write such a great record while being on the road? Because normally people come back when they write songs on the road with songs like On the Road Again, you know?
That's an amazing song. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure if I was like pleased with a song like that on a Sasami album.
Yeah, fair enough. But maybe the next one. No, I don't know. The songs that I wrote were just... I don't think it was just about being on the road. I think just being on the road, because my background is classical music and being a teacher and like working so much harder. Actually being on tour is like a joke. There's like so much free time.
Yeah.
Really, you're like in a van all day and then you like check in and then you like eat food and walk around and play your instrument. Like it's not... It's a different kind of emotional labor to do the job, but in terms of time, you can find time.
Yeah, that's true.
To write, and for me,
it's the hurry up and wait thing, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it wasn't really the fact that I was on tour that made me want to write. It was the fact that I had time.
Yeah.
For the first time after like being in school and teaching and like actually being on tour, ironically, it was the first time I actually had time to write, was on tour.
Yeah.
And now
as you explain it, I was thinking of that peril that exists, because when you're on tour, you're traveling through the country and your record is kind of traveling through your emotional states that you've had in that period of time.
Well, you spend so much time thinking when you're on tour also, you know, so and listening to podcasts.
And maybe meeting people.
Possibly,
like one or two.
Like you, I guess.
We've met twice. Oh, yeah. You have talked to another interviewer about the French horn, because that's the instrument that you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting instrument. And the interviewer asked you who your favorite horn player is worldwide, and it turns out to be the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra.
Stefan Dohr.
You adore Stefan Dohr.
I'm an adorer.
Yes.
Oh, like a believer. I'm an adorer.
Whoa.
Oh.
Let's just print this t-shirt and give it to him.
Oh my gosh, I want to go see the Phil so badly while I'm here, but I don't think we have a day off tomorrow. I don't think they're playing. There's like some chamber music thing happening, but I did go see the Berlin Phil last year last year when I was here, and then we're doing Strauss and Mahler.
It was
too much for my little heart.
I think Mahler, like that really knocks me out of my feet, because the unexpected things that are happening with Mahler, even if you've listened to the music before, it's like, oh.
Yeah, it's theatrics, it's drama.
Yeah, that's true.
It's romance, death. Perilous.
And now we realize that you know about all these things, the Greek tragedy things. That are, you know about all these things. And you've used your talent to write film scores as well. Mm-hmm. And there's another thing that I found out via this interview, and that's the fact that you were invited to a session with Van Dyke Parks that didn't happen.
Oh, I know. So
Van Dyke
sad.
Parks, for people out there, his first job Jeez. Was to arrange Bare Necessities for the Jungle Book in 1967. Yeah. He was the arranger behind
He's brilliant. Yep.
So, but how do you adapt to this other situation when you're working on a film score? Because that now you've worked with other bands at their service. Now you have your own record out. It's everything about you. You had to control over every fucking signal on the record. But then when you work with the director, you have to please them, kind of. And,
I haven't worked on any scores since the record's been out, or like since I've been kind of doing my solo music. So it'd probably be a nightmare because I'm such an egotistical monster now. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, my background is in classical music, which is basically just, you know, doing karaoke of old dead white guys all day. So pretty much everything is creative compared to that.
Wow, that's a nice way of putting it.
No offense, classical musicians, but your lives are minimal in some ways. But, you know, it's like a really transcendent experience to be in an orchestra and like be even sonically surrounded by all the instruments. It's unlike anything else. But in some ways, it's less creative than just speaking a sentence. Because you're just, you know, reading what's on the page. So for me, I think it's been, you know, everything has only been more liberating since that. So even to do a score for someone was like so radical compared to just playing written music. You know?
I really find the way that you put it really interesting. That's like a karaoke of old dead white men's music. But it is. It is like that. It's totally true. And then you said that speaking a sentence can be more creative than to speak like a whole partiture of classical music. I mean, there's exceptions from that rule, I guess. But there's another interesting thing that I found out about the record is that some of those lyrics started out with unsent messages from your phone. And I was like, I think that's a genius idea to start a lyric to just like write messages on your phone to people and not send them, you know, because there's a few messages I think everyone has for people around him or her, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe if you send them, the friendship's going to be over.
True.
But if you type them down, realize what the problem is, and then you can start doing something creatively with it, I think it's a good starting point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that when you're drafting a text message, you're just going off. Sometimes you like send someone a text and they don't respond for 15 minutes and you're like, fuck this guy, they don't even fucking care about me, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, sorry, I was at the dentist. And you're like, oh, hi, I hope you're good. How are you? How's your mom?
Yeah.
But like that emotional like 15 minutes before they respond.
It's a good
emotional warfare.
Point. Yeah.
You know,
when you teach children, when you teach music to children, do you only teach the way to, as a receptionist, to listen to music and to understand music, or do you teach creative techniques as well?
Everything. When I'm teaching kids, it's like dance and movement and improvisation and learning the bass line and learning the melody and performing it together and learning a harmony part and percussion instruments and singing and everything, you know? Like, I just truly believe that teaching music is like teaching a language. It's like you don't learn by reading the language first or by writing.
Yeah.
Or sorry, you don't learn by reading first. You have to like hear people talk. Like when you're a child and you're learning a language, it's like you listen and then you like start to form sentences and then you learn how to read and write. You're not a 2-year-old and your mom's like, you're not allowed to talk until you learn how to read and write.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
And that's like what music education is like. It's like you're like in middle school or like 10 and they're like, you have to learn this piece. And the piece is just like, bum, bum. Bum, bum, bum. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
How about like something a little bit more fun?
Yeah, but that's interesting again, because that's where the musicality of any language comes into place. Because if you've listened to people talking French to each other as a 4-year-old, it will be much more easy for you to learn that language when you're 20, 25, 30, 40, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Because you've once captured the melody and you've understood the melody, I think. And
definitely.
That's something that's interesting.
I mean, just can you imagine if you only learned how to read and write, but never how to make your own sentence? That's what classical music is like. You're like learning how to read and perform this music.
This
but then if someone says, make
me.
Something up, you're just like...
Wow. that way of explaining classical music really fucks with my brain right now. Because
sure.
I can't imagine. It's like unimaginable.
Kind of fascist. It's kind of messed up. But...
Oh, no, let's not go that far.
Well, I'm allowed to because I spent $100,000 to study it. So I'm allowed to roast its ass, okay?
It's not only Wagner, bitches.
No, I mean, I love classical music. Of course, I have a Strauss, a Mahler, and a Brahms tattoo on my body.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
forever indebted okay. to these old white men. They're yeah. my soulmates. But at the same time, I had to write an album. You
yeah.
know? Got
and
people to see.
That's something
to do.
That we have to talk about after the song right now, because it fits to this point of the conversation. It's called
sure.
Callous. It's about your hands, basically, when
yeah.
you were playing a lot of French horn.
Definitely. No, it's actually about carrying the case as a child.
It's not even about the playing. It's the carrying of the case.
Have you seen the case?
Yeah,
it's like an elephant.
Yeah, that's true. And then we'll talk a bit about the fact that you were trying to avoid to get too innovative on the record. Because that's something that's interesting when we're talking about classical composing and the new Sasami record. Hier ist nochmal zu hören mit Callous, Sasami aus L.A.
I lost my...
Callous. Auf Flux FM, Sasami und ein Auszug von der Platte Sasami, die am 8. März erschienen ist. Auch kein Zufall wahrscheinlich. Just remembered that the record came out on the 8th of March, International Women's Day.
Women's Day!
No coincidence, I believe.
I don't think so, honey.
We've just talked about the fact that you're from a classical background. You've worked with bands that are super innovative. There's innovative... moments on your record, production-wise, there are things happening that are really like nice to the ear, and still it's unexpected. But you tried not to go for a too innovative sound because you have the feeling that innovation might stand in the way of transporting the emotion.
I mean, I just really I wanted to because I'm a Korean kid, okay? I'm very studious. I was that guy at school, that, you know, kind of brown noser, I did my homework, that kind of person. And even when I was making my album, I wanted to learn while I was making it. So I wanted to make it analog. I wanted to understand how do compressors work? How do microphones work? I didn't want to work in this digital platform that's kind of like a mock-up of what real analog engineering is. So I wanted to keep it straightforward. I recorded it on a 16-track tape machine.
Nice.
You know, I didn't use plugins. I didn't use that kind of stuff. And yeah, I wanted to learn while I was doing it, learn the fundamentals and understand my own. I wanted to build my own sound concept. So when I do move on to more digital platforms and more experimental stuff, I know what my roots are. I know what a fundamentally good tone is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. And I do love the analog equipment thingies because of their big knobs. You want to touch the old school compressor and change the setting on it. It's much more fun than
to do it. Knobs.
Yeah, I really, come on. If you do it on your iPhone or on your Mac,
really
it's just like whoa, really boring. But on a vintage old school compressor, it goes like clonk.
I just deplore looking at screens when I'm doing music.
Yeah.
It's like, why am I using my eyes? I should be using my ears. You know, when you're recording analog, there's no visual there. I mean, there's some meters, some like little you know, like little
meters,
exactly, but there aren't, you're not looking at waveforms. Like, it's kind of like maddening to me to like be looking at a waveform while playing it. It just seems so disassociative or something.
And I think it's good for the music, because I think when you record on an analog machine, if you record on tape, if you record with the band live in the room, you rehearse more. You find out a lot more about your own songs before you enter the studio, and it's good for everybody.
Yeah,
it's good
definitely.
For the engineer, good for the producer, good for you, good for the artist, good for the music, good for
I mean, I wrote all the songs and arranged them on my iPad.
Yeah.
You know, I used technology to create and arrange the songs. So when I recorded it, I wanted to do a different thing. I wanted to do kind of a purist approach.
So the music has been prepared in a very strict way, kind of. Whereas the lyrics were written on the last, like in the last minute. Another interesting thing, because I think maybe that's the good way to get something out of your system that you wouldn't get out of the system if you were thinking about it too much.
I mean, that's kind of the whole thing about the album. Like, I made the album when I was in another band, before I was signed to a label, before I was a solo artist. I was literally just making songs. I wasn't on Domino making her second album, blah, 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 tour cycle, blah, 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 press release. Like, that wasn't what I was thinking when I made the album, you know? Now I'm going to make some corporate garbage shit because, you know, it's my job now. But when I was making the album, I was just doing what I had to do.
Yeah.
So it definitely came from a very pure place, for better or for worse. I mean, I think there is an art of songwriting, an art of song crafting, and an art of production that I maybe didn't push myself in a lot of ways, but I wasn't trying to push myself. I was trying to just let myself do something really natural.
Yeah, and I really think that method of writing lyrics in the last minute, we've just established that it's good for everybody in the team when the music is prepared well. And I think lyrics that haven't been prepared at all, it's like a nightmare already. It's still, again, for the people working
around
you.
Well, I was writing the lyrics at the very beginning and then never changing them. That's what it was. A lot of the songs I would write, and I would kind of stream of consciousness write the lyrics, and then I'd be like, oh, I'll go back and change it. And then I would try to change it, and I'd be like, eh, whatever. That's why I say that. In some of my songs, I just say the weirdest shit. Like, in one of the songs, I say Sheridan Riley. Singing songs, Sheridan Riley. Because she's the drummer that was in the room. She played in that band, Abby Buffalo. She plays in Always.
Okay.
She's really, really cool.
Always, we play them a lot.
Yeah, she's the drummer in that band. She's really awesome. And she was in the room playing drums. And so I was just like making up lyrics. And I said her name. And then I was like, fuck it.
Yeah.
This is the lyric.
I love the fact that your stream of consciousness kind of way of writing leads to the unconscious. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Your brother played on the record. A few other people played on the record. And you've kind of like recollected favors from the artists that you've
pretty much. It was the cheapest way to make it was to be my brother.
Yeah, cool. Sorry. is this Juju Ashworth on the line? I need you to come in.
No,
play some stuff for me.
He got a healthy cut. He's doing just fine. See, like, I'm wearing his Froth shirt.
Froth is his band, right?
Yeah. They were here recently, I think.
Okay, cool. We have to invite them next time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All the Ashworths.
It's contractual. I'm never coming again if you don't bring my brother.
Sorry. LA seems to be a good place. I mean, I've talked about the fact that you've invited all these musician friends, and it seems to be a good place for female musicians or non-binary musicians right now. There's a few anecdotes from your surroundings that I've read, and I was like, yeah, cool. It seems to be maybe on the same level as Berlin right now when one's talking about non-binary musicians or female musicians, because there's a lot of room up, I guess, for female artists.
Definitely. It's your classic liberal bubble, and I love it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Not trying to leave it.
Yeah, cool.
It's scary out there.
In Los Angeles.
Outside of the liberal bubble. I don't think I like it.
I mean, it really is kind of scary.
Right now, we're in this room with all the windows, and it kind of feels like my society.
Yeah.
It's scary out there.
You're living in the bubble right now, because this is Kreuzberg, the most liberal part of town, you know, and Berlin has
But when you tour, you go through every...
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you go through the South of America. You go through the Midwest of America. You go through a lot of those places that are not quite as progressive as Los Angeles and Berlin, which is a pretty high bar.
But I think people who come to your show, they might be more out of the progressive.
I don't know. I had a show the other day in Brighton where.
In England.
You know, especially when you're a female musician, you get a lot of. And if they play you on the BBC and stuff, you get this kind of like older white dude crowd where they like. And I'm a small band, so my stage is not very far from the audience, right? There's like pretty much zero space between me and the audience. And I'll get these like 60-year-old dudes who like are up at the very front with their cameras the whole time. And they come to like many shows in the UK. So I just said, you know, the most basic bitch thing, girls to the front. I was just like, okay, instead of saying, can you go away? Because that makes me feel uncomfortable and unsafe to have the dialogue. I just said, okay, people of color and women to the front, and men, if you could just take one step back. And then it became a whole thing.
Oh, no.
Liberal, finger quotes, Brighton.
Okay,
it became a whole thing. Most of the men there were fine, but, you know, someone shouted, fuck you, onto the stage. And, like, someone else went off and started tweeting about how I'm a reverse racist.
Oh, yeah.
reverse sexist. But the,
That's why my toxic masculinity kind of kicks in, because I want to slap someone when I listen to that.
For sure. It makes you almost... it makes you violently angry.
Yeah, sorry.
But the wild thing is, like, for every 50 people who, you know, because I retweeted this guy's tweet about how Sasami is reverse racist and reverse sexist. And, like, for every 50 people just being like, wow, male tears, there's one white guy that just has to talk about how reverse racism is a thing and how I'm segregating white men. You know, I didn't make up girls to the front, okay?
No.
Right, girl? Yeah. Heard of it? Okay.
And I don't think that you can compare the fate of having to stand a few meters back on a show in Brighton with the fate of people of color or with the history of women in Western societies, you know?
But anyway, so it's just kind of shocking.
Yeah.
Finger quotes. Liberal Brighton.
Yes.
End finger quotes.
Yeah.
You know? So, but anyways, that just shows we still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
It could be worse.
Yeah, it could be worse, and I guess... the work is being done right now as we speak. We're all kind of, I really hope so. We're all kind of part of something that's happening that's going to end in a situation that's better for all of us. That's what we're working for. Mila's thinking that we're talking too long.
Oh, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, the thing is, she's never listening. Because if she had listened, she would have realized that it's like interesting.
She's just looking at the time.
Yeah, she's just looking at the
trouble.
Time. Yeah, yeah.
Fair enough.
Doesn't even care about...
You would be shit without her. Admit it.
It's true. That's true. Now she's back on the scene. She likes us again. And there's applause from all the seats out there. What's happening? Sasami.
I dropped my pick out of anger.
And I've opened the mic with the reverb, so it sounds like a little bathroom in here right now.
I'm angry!
Take Care is the name of the song. Björn Sasami live on Flux FM.
Someone to hold me down. don't trust myself anymore. Being alone is such a chore. I know that I should be bold. I know that I have gotten older. I know that I can hold this body.
Liberal Brighton.
Thank you, Sasami.
Hashtag Liberal Borderline.
For visiting. I'll give away some tickets for tonight's show. Mila is
No, people should pay for it. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm
okay, going to
give away some tickets. I mean, Mila, now she's been pissed with me. If you don't give away tickets, she's going to be pissed with you. She's going to be pissed all day, and that's not good for any of us.
I think she's fine.
She's laughing.
She's laughing.
It's a manic laugh, though. It's like it doesn't seem healthy.
She's cursing with a laugh in her face.
She's laughing because she just what's the word? Hoaxed you.
Yeah, she's hoaxed me.
No, not hoaxed. What's the word I'm thinking of?
She's conned me.
No, when you would put a spell on someone.
Ah,
hoax. No,
she's like a hoax. Witch or something.
Yeah.
Oh,
hex.
Man. She put a hex on.
You.
Oh yeah. Damn.
She's laughing because she's hexing you.
I shouldn't look at her too long. Because
I was wondering why when you turned around she snipped some of your hair off and put it into a cauldron.
some Medusa stuff is happening here. Don't look at her too long. You're gonna be made out of stone. Also jetzt bevor hier irgendjemand verwandelt wird, schnell die Tickets raus. 030-2000-9000, das ist die Nummer zum Glück. 030-2000-9000 jetzt anrufen und ihr bekommt Tickets für Sasami in der Kantine am Berghain. It was a great pleasure to be talking to you again.
Dankeschön.
Thanks a lot. And I'll play you some Ilge Nur music. She's a musician from Berlin who's a great fan of yours. We have that show called Orspiel where people present their favorite artists. And that musician from Berlin, she's like, Sasami's my favorite artist.
Oh my God.
Now you have to listen to her and like her.
Oh my God, thank you.
No pressure at all. Sasami, heute Abend in der Kantine am Berghain. 030 2000 9000. Bye.